From Nashville and Charlotte, this is the Shrink Tank Podcast. Each week, our panel of shrinks takes a look at pop culture through the fascinating lens of psychology. I'm Dave Verhagen here in Nashville. I'm a psychologist, author, Comic-Con panelist, and professional rodeo clown. And our trending topic today is the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. That's in our second segment. But first, let's meet our Charlotte panel. It includes psychologist, author, AspieCon founder, Comic-Con panelist, and Max Gamer graphic novel creator, Dr. Frank Gaskell. Hello, Frank.
Hello, David.
This is your last podcast before you leave us.
Yes.
You're going to
heaven. This is it. I'm going.
That is not a given.
I'm going to the pet cemetery in the sky. That's
You're
where
going
I'm
to heaven or somewhere else.
Yep.
Like Baldhead Island.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm going to build
That's heaven for rich white people.
Oh, please. You're, well, actually, that's kind of true.
It is very true.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Well, good. Well, you deserve it. You.
Thank you. I'm not sure I deserve it, but I do appreciate it.
Well, it'll be good for you. I don't know if it'll be good for you, but you'll enjoy it. How's that sound?
That sounds good.
All right. And also, Emma Kate Wright is here. She's a doctoral intern who really is already finished with her PhD requirements. So we're going to kind of call her Dr. Wright for now, I guess.
Almost-ish.
I mean, you've completed all the requirements. You just have to walk across that stage. So
that's
all you got left. And she is a psychology intern, a contributor to ShrinkTank.com, a panelist for Heroes Con, and all kinds of other good things. Hello, Emma Kate.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm enjoying the afternoon thunderstorms and just the mood of summer.
And we're not going to talk about this too long, but real quickly, you mentioned this last week on our podcast, the debut episode of Game of Thrones. We were both a little wigged out by the Ed Sheeran cameo, but did you like the episode?
I did enjoy the episode. I don't want to say too much. It started out killer, really strong, and then I think it really nicely set up the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
I think all that's true. And it literally did start off killer.
Yeah.
A good one.
Fact.
And finally, Jonathan Hederle's here. He's a licensed professional counselor, an expert on substance abuse treatment, and a certified Asian who's written published book chapters on the psychology of Game of Thrones and Star Wars and The Walking Dead and stuff like that. He's also served as a panelist for Heroes Con, and each week he rounds up two great stories of psychology in the news that we call Being Human.
So the largest ever study into bullying among teenagers in England suggests that concerns about cyberbullying may be overblown, with traditional real-world bullying still hugely outstripping it. So the study of more than 100,000 teenagers shows that less than 1% of teens that are bullied only experience it online. So, Frank, as our resident bully and bullying victim, do you believe cyberbullying has been exaggerated?
Yes, I do. I was thankful for the study because it kind of put some data to it. But even when I look at my clients and hear their stories, the bullying that's still is just classic. It's still ongoing. It's in person. And I will occasionally hear the online stuff, but that's not the predominant. And I feel like this is another example of sort of people putting information out there and, oh, yeah, it must be horrible, and it just gets shared, but there's no real data behind it.
Yeah, I agree with this article, too, where, you know, probably isn't as prevalent as we think, especially because kids who are doing bullying, they're pretty savvy at times, not always because they are obviously being impulsive, but when you do things online, there's a paper trail, so to speak, and so that evidence is there that could incriminate the bully, get him in trouble, and kids are aware of that, so they don't want a record of it.
Mm-hmm. But didn't the study just say only 1% had only experienced cyberbullying? That doesn't necessarily mean it's not an issue, because a lot of kids who are bullied at school are bullied online and so on. Isn't that the takeaway from the article?
Well, I think that is a takeaway, but it was in the 20s of the percentage of kids that are bullied at school. And so just the discrepancy of those numbers says there's something there. The one thing that I would say to this is when you are bullied online, you now have the potential to be bullied by thousands of people rather than just a couple kids at school. But also, I think the news will pick up on the kid that hurts themselves because of online bullying, but I'm not hearing the stories about kids that hurt themselves when they're being bullied at school, and they have to exist.
Well, it's because, like what Emma Kate was saying, the paper trail, and I think that it just feeds into parental fear already about technology and social media and their inability to monitor it, or even for their kids to be able to read the nuance of just verb or just written text and what it implies when it comes to social interaction. So, moving on, a controversial international movement has raised a debate about whether patients who hear voices and suffer other symptoms that psychiatrists would consider severe have the right to direct their treatment, even if that means rejecting conventional therapies such as psychiatric medication. So many in the movement say they're not mentally ill because their hallucinations don't cause them distress or interfere significantly with their ability to live a productive life. They also go on to cite that oftentimes medication causes more problems than the voices that they hear. So, Emma Kate, as our resident hallucinatory voice person, what's your position about patients refusing medications?
Wait. Our hallucinatory voice person.
Yeah, hallucinatory.
You like that?
We're going to have a little placard made for you.
Yes, that would be a great title to add behind my name. This is a tough one. I don't have extensive work with individuals who are dealing with psychosis, whether it's voices, hallucinations. I had some early on in my training, but, I do think it's critical for any patient to have some level of control over their care. And, for adults who their functioning isn't being impaired by these hallucinations, the voices, they're not a threat to other safety or their own, I don't see why they can't potentially not take medications for it. I will comment that, I think it's good that instead of trying to just solve this problem with a pill, it allows people to try and face kind of the underlying reason for maybe what that voice or, what that hallucination might be the result of, whether it's lots of stress or some sort of trauma in their background. So, but I don't know. It's hard to say whether or not, that's truly the right decision.
I'm not – I don't really buy this article too much. For one reason, support group for people who hear voices. Like, I'd like to join that group. That sounds fun. But
what does that even mean?
Here's what this means. All the schizophrenic people that I have worked with, hearing voices is one symptom. But the flat affect and all the other symptoms that go along with schizophrenia, in this article, she's saying she's got a demanding job and she's doing all those things. And I'm like, is this schizophrenia or is this really something else where I think it was 8% of people or some percentage when they hear themselves talking, they don't identify that as their voice. They identify it as somebody else. It seemed a little weird.
I feel like I'm missing something because it feels like if somebody isn't harming themselves or hurting someone else or at a huge risk for that, that they should have the right to take medicine or not take medicine. I don't care. I mean, regardless of the diagnosis, it doesn't feel to me like it's sort of like, any health thing. It's like that's theirs to manage. So it just struck me as weird because it seems like unless someone is, an active danger to somebody or themselves, then it's like who's going to compel them to do that?
Yeah, there's a part of me that wonders if I'm living in a bubble and that just is more common in the general population than the folks that I interact with and work with, that there's so many of their own rights and autonomy that's been taken away from them with their own managed care.
Well, and I think it's important to think about, what would this look like for a kid versus an adult? So, fun story, my very first therapy client ever had schizoaffective disorder, and kid reported seeing exoskeletons, eyes, would hear doors and sirens in their head. It was very intense, and for me in that sort of situation, it's kind of like, well, this is a kid. He doesn't really understand from a cognitive perspective kind of how to cope and deal with this. And so it wouldn't make any sense for parents to say, well, Tommy or whoever his name is, you know, what do you want to do about this, right? So obviously this should only be applied to adults.
Well, it's the same idea with any kind of health. I mean, like if a kid is diabetic, the parents don't go, well, you know, if you want to take your insulin, you can. I mean, they just like, that's the decision. You know, you're taking your insulin. And the same thing. I mean, but once someone's an adult, it's their health issue to manage, even if we think
yep.
we know better than them. I mean, that's, if they're not harming somebody or themselves, that's not our business in a way.
Yep, it's on them.
All righty. We're going to take our first break, and when we come back, it will be our trending topic, which is the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. This is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Good psychology can change your life. At Psych Bites, we feature articles and videos with practical psychology that you can use every day. Psych Bites is a new psychology website with free articles and videos from dozens of the best psychology experts. Check it out on psychbites.com.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. I'm Dave Verhagen in Nashville, along with Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, and Emma Kate Wright in Charlotte. And our trending topic today is the 10th anniversary of the iPhone. And so I just want to go around and ask, do all of you have iPhones or do you have Android phones? Who's got what? Jonathan?
I have an iPhone.
All right. And has that been the case since smartphones have come out?
My first smartphone was an iPhone 4, and I've had an iPhone ever since.
All right. Frank?
I think I have like 12 iPhones.
At a time.
And my son, for his birthday last week, got his first iPhone.
That works in his new car.
Yeah. Hilarious. He's 12, you idiot.
Like you said. Emma Kay.
Yes, I have, for my first smartphone, I had an iPhone, and I've been iPhone ever since.
Okay, so all four of us have iPhones, and it is hard to believe that it's only been 10 years of the iPhone, because I think more than anything else, would you guys agree, the iPhone has probably changed, I'm talking the iPhone / smartphone, but really the iPhone being the thing that started this, has changed our culture more than any single bit of technology. Would you agree?
I think probably the wheel might be a little more important.
Fire.
I mean, fire. Saying.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay,
yes.
So we go
yes.
The invention of fire, the invention
right.
of the
fire,
wheel, and
wheel,
then
electricity.
No, I guess, let me rephrase that, because I'm glad you said that. I don't mean ever. I do mean in our culture. In
lifetime.
This the 21st century.
Oh, 100%.
Yep. Absolutely. I mean, when you think about the amount, it's like having a full, you know, computers used to take up entire rooms, and now you have it right in your hand, the access to so much information, where just at a click of a little button, tap the screen.
Jonathan, how about you?
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, people lose their keys, they lose their wallet. Everybody knows where their phone is at every second. And when they don't, they drop what's going on in life to make sure they know where their phone is. It's amazing.
So I want to ask about whether it's good or bad, or what's good about it, what's bad about it. And then I also want to talk about some of the psychological aspects of what the iPhone has done for us and to us. But just to start, more good than bad, more bad than good, obviously a mixed bag, but what's good about it, what's bad about it, how do you feel about the iPhone and our culture? Emma Kate, how about you?
I personally think overall it's been very positive. Just kind of one example that, you know, came to mind when I was thinking about this is that GPS on our phone. So whether it's parents being able to say, okay, where's my kid right now? I know they have their phone on them. And even just, you know, thinking back to when I was younger, when we would go on beach trips. I vividly remember my dad and I going to a gas station, buying a brand new map so that I could help him highlight out the path that we were going to take versus map, you know, then MapQuest came along where you print out your directions, but it's just, it's all right there. And you're in the middle of nowhere and you have no clue where you are. You just pull up your phone and say, okay, I need help finding how to get back home. It's unbelievable.
Jonathan, how about you?
I definitely am on the side that it's more good than harm or drawback, although there clearly is. I mean, I even see it in my own life. But I will say, I am so grateful and thankful that smartphones weren't around when I was a kid or a teen, because I just don't know with my maturity and impulsivity how that really would have negatively impacted me. I mean, and so I feel like as an adult, I sometimes struggle with my relationship with technology, but I feel like I have it in a place of relative health and responsibility. I don't know if that would have happened if I had a smartphone as a kid or a teen.
I will be able to answer this question on September 5th.
Because?
Because I'm going to be off all social media.
Sure.
Sure you
are.
We're
going to see if he lives.
For six weeks.
Starting when? What date are you starting this?
Yeah.
Friday.
Is this for real? Because I thought you said you were already starting, and then I keep seeing all this.
No, Dave. It's funny you say that.
I got rid of Snapchat.
And then re-downloaded it.
Only to get the Game of Thrones filter. Uh-huh. Stop it. And I had all these snaps, but I didn't read them. I didn't look at them.
You going to get off Grindr, too?
They're hilarious. So, yeah, I will know what it's like and whether it's hurt me or not. In 6 weeks.
So you're going to be off all social media for 6 weeks.
Yep. My phone will become a camera and my video game system.
Okay.
I mean, so, I'll still text people if I need to.
So that's what I'm wondering about.
He's just going to be off social media.
Yeah, social media. That's only one part of the iPhone. I mean, that's only, like, are you still going to be...
But that's pretty much what I use it for.
But you
don't use it for calls or
I hate talking on the phone.
Text people.
I'm gonna
check email.
I'm not gonna talk. I'm not gonna check email. I'm not good. No. Nope.
So
or Pokemon Go.
That's a game.
Is your head gonna be in your phone the whole time? Like, is this still gonna happen even though you're all social media? Are you gonna? Is this gonna change? Is it gonna change your behavior in any way?
Yes.
Okay. How so?
Well, I look at Twitter, I look at Facebook constantly, and I won't have any need to do that.
All right.
I'm going to be reading, and that's it.
Okay, so let me
ask... I mean, I'll still listen to Howard Stern, but that's different.
That is different. Let's follow up with you on this. The psychology of the iPhone, do you think... What has it done to us? Like, how has it changed us... changed our brains? How has it changed our relationships? Like, what has it done, Frank?
Well, I think it's made us more distracted, to be honest, because we're not meant to multitask. That's not the way our brains are wired. I think through social media, and we've seen research studies on this, that it causes you to be more depressed the more you're on Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. But I also think it has harmed us as a society, because now we can select what we want to listen to or not when it comes to politics or society, because we just, it's increased how siloed our information centers are, which can do nothing but keep us separated.
And has proven to be a bad thing. I think we would all argue that it has proven to be a bad thing in the last election cycle, not just because of the outcome, but just even how it all went down.
Yeah.
But in terms of the actual iPhone, though, because that feels more like social media just in general. But the iPhone itself, I mean, and I can't cite the study, but there is research out there that talks about how when we are using and connected to iPhones, our brains are releasing the same neurotransmitters that we release with love and intimacy, which is kind of crazy because it's this device that is always there for you and gives you this sort of positive reinforcement. You know, you touch it and it moves and it does things like that. And so our brains, from this neurological perspective, we're wired to want this and need this.
Well, cocaine does the same thing there, genius.
Well, right, but we're talking about the phone,
well,
Frank.
I have both
drugs
in my pocket right now, so it's all good.
I know that, like, if I wake up in the middle of the night for whatever reason, you know, like the dog's walking around on the bed or something, my instinct is to check my phone. Not even because I think there's going to be information on there that I need to know, but just like, oh, I'll play the little word game, or I'll do it's like a little comfort to me. And so that feels kind of, now, you know, when I reflect on it, that seems kind of weird. It's sort of like it's a significant other, almost like Emma Kate's saying.
Yep. Well, that's Alexa.
For you, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the iPhone has sort of ushered in Alexa and our comfort with that kind of thing, being able to feel like our technology is personal to us, not just like a device that sits on our desk or that we use for some task, but it's like a personal aspect of our life. It's in the emotional world of our life.
Well, and I think Steve Jobs created that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would like to know if people feel they have the same connection to their Samsung Galaxy as they do to the iPhone. It just feels a little different to me. But I'm not sure.
Don't those blow up though?
Well, yeah, actually, not many people know this.
Oh boy.
But do you know who creates every single processor in an iPhone?
China.
Samsung. Mm-hmm. They make their phones and they make all of iPhone's chips. That seems crazy and dangerous.
Crazy and dangerous. Jonathan, any thoughts about any of this?
Well, I mean, I think the iPhone, the smartphone, really has impacted our kind of need for instant gratification and our desire to be distracted constantly. And I see this with myself. I see this with those I work with, that it also can really negatively impact their frustration tolerance, like just getting agitated and irritated by low-hanging fruit and just things that are insignificant. And I don't blame the iPhone for that, but I mean, when we're talking about Alexa, we're talking about iPhone, we're talking about just a culture we've created of convenience and access to anything and everything in the palm of our hand. So I do think that that's had some influence on us.
It's funny that you used cocaine as an example, and that's how I feel about it. I used to feel like this was more mild.
Because you would know. So. Well,
I was going to say that I've never done cocaine, but I would imagine there's a big upside and a big downside, right? That like cocaine.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm feeling. Like the answer to, is this more good or more bad? You know, which is it? Is it worse or better for us? It feels like it cuts both ways really hard. I would land on the side of, on balance, probably in the plus column. But man, I think there's some big downsides to it in terms of what it's done to us culturally. I make a point when I go into a restaurant, I look around at tables, and it's very rare to see like a parent and a teenager at a table, or even a younger couple, that where they're not on their phone almost the entire time. That's a weird thing. You know, that's mm-hmm. a culturally very different thing. It's hard for me to go through a television show without being on my phone. That's also weird. You know, like I'm watching it on a decently big size screen TV, and then throughout that, I've got to do different things on my phone. That's strange. So I think how we think, what we think about, what it does to us in terms of our ability to have patience, all that kind of stuff, it's not all good.
I read an article a couple of weeks ago circling around the iPhone's anniversary, and it talked about one of the biggest changes or impact that it's had is on people going to the bathroom. And they did a study to where the amount of time that people would stay on the toilet if they had a phone versus if they didn't was astronomical.
I'll stay in there for a couple hours.
As well as since the iPhone is, you know, was launched, the traffic of Googling hemorrhoids had just shot through the roof.
Well, I'm going to tell you this. This happened this week. I mean, I will admit this first. I definitely text on the toilet. So I think most of us do that.
It's called TT.
Yeah. But I would not talk on the phone on the toilet. And I was in our bathroom down the hall at my office, right? Public bathroom. And there's a guy in the stall talking on the phone while he's pooping. I'm like, that is weird.
Yeah, that's weird.
That's a weird thing.
Did you start making like gross noises in the background? Like I'd be going like, oh, I hit the courtesy flush over there.
This concludes our discussion for today.
Yep, and that's going to wrap it up. All right, we're going to take one last break. And when we come back, it'll be our doctor's orders. And this is the Shrink Tank Podcast.
Hero House Publishing is pleased to announce Heroic Inspirations by Michael Kreitzer. Over the ages, superheroes in various forms have been speaking to humanity in togas, robes, and now tights and capes. They speak to us about the human condition. They help us work through our fears and failures. Heroic Inspirations draws out rich lessons superheroes provide for our daily lives. How does Superman teach us to deal with difficult people? What do the X-Men tell us about balancing individual and communal identities? Superheroes speak to these and many other life questions. Michael Kreitzer has been researching and teaching on superheroes for over 10 years, and now his book, Heroic Inspirations, is available to you at herohousepublishing.com or amazon.com. Order your copy today.
Welcome back to the Shrink Tank Podcast. Dave Verhagen, Frank Gaskell, Jonathan Hederle, and Emma Kate Wright. And we wrap this all up with our doctor's orders. These are things that we're personally enjoying in pop culture. And Emma Kate, what do you have for us?
So I recently discovered a new rapper named Logic. He came out with an album called Everybody. And there's a song on there that's really great. It's titled 1-800-273-8255. And that sounds like, what? How is that the name of a song? But it's actually about suicide, and that is the suicide hotline number. And it's a really fantastic song, and I love that it was bringing awareness to people needing help. So people should check it out.
Jonathan.
So Netflix dropped a couple weeks ago an original movie called Okja, and it's directed by Bong Joon-ho, the director that did Snowpiercer, as well as the famous monster movie Host. His movies are super creative, but always all over the place. This is another movie I highly recommend. It's very impactful. It's very emotional. It's called Okja.
Frank.
I would like to recommend any of you SiriusXM listeners to go on Howard On Demand on your app and listen to the interview, Town Hall with Billy Joel. It is amazing. That guy is so crazy talented, but the interview is fascinating.
I'd love to hear that. And Frank, we're going to miss you.
Miss you too.
Yes, goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody. Yes.
My Doctor's Orders is a show that I got hooked on several seasons ago. I'm not a big fan of dance historically, but this show called So You Think You Can Dance has really gotten me into loving the whole the art form of dance. I don't like the Dancing with the Stars or a few of the other dance shows. I've watched all of them at least once, and I just don't like them. This show I really like. I like that it really highlights different forms of dance. You really understand what makes them different, how they're set up. The contestants are really appealing. So I, again, highly recommend So You Think You Can Dance. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of the Shrink Tank Podcast. We hope you'll check out shrinktank.com for articles, videos, and polls about all kinds of things in pop culture. Make sure you check out shrinktank.com. And also, follow us on Twitter @shrink_tank and like us on Facebook by searching for the Shrink Tank Podcast. Our producer and theme music composer is Sean Beck. In the Queen City, it's Emma Kate Wright, Jonathan Hederle, and Frank Gaskell. And from Music City, I'm Dave Verhagen. Thanks for listening. Please tell all your friends about us and make it a good week.